線で全員12名ご利用交通機ご利用のお客様へご搭乗最終のご案内申し上げます。
I think one of us should say Rad Strangest, then another should say International.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, come two, okay. Rad, Smith, like, what do you...
No, one of us would say...
Welcome to Camp Rad Strangeness.
International. Hey gang, welcome back to your favorite podcast, That Would Be Rad, the podcast that majors in 80s and 90s nostalgia, comic culture, all things paranormal, and minors in retro video games, tabletop RPGs, pre-internet mysteries, and raising our kids to be half as cool as we were back in the 80s. I'm your counselor, Tyler Bentz, and this is your other camp counselor,
Woody Brown.
Hey pal.
Hey man, what's going on?
Hey man, it's almost like... We just talked and had a full interview or a full episode.
Yeah, no.
My brain is so scrambled.
Yeah, well, it's funny because last week, well, we kind of like spaced the topics out a little bit. Mm-hmm. Since you sort of pivoted, it doesn't necessarily throw a wrench into the thing, but we kind of wanted to give some space from being down in Southeast Asia. We've got some other stuff that we want to talk about in that region. And then you're going to talk about something more in like maybe a Scandinavian thing. But now we were in a neighboring sort of desert area. So we're still in Asia. This time, however, you know, Asia's a funny thing whenever you think about it. When you think of Asia, for me, I always think of Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. I rarely even really think about places like India or upper northern sort of the China area where it's like kind of South Russia basically, right?
Oh,
I never really think of that or kind of remember that that is also a part of Asia, you know?
Isn't that, that's like Uzbekistan and stuff?
Well, I'm more talking about like, you know, like, yes.
I mean, that's like close, their continents are close.
Right, and or their countries are close.
Right.
I'm more talking about like what would be considered like Mongolia.
Yeah.
And so this week, that's kind of the area that we're going to be. In fact, we are going to be talking about something that is found or alleged to be found in the Gobi Desert. Now, this is one of those topics that I don't know if you could tell when we were sort of just like talking about and planning Camp Rad Strangeness International this year. The moment that you said this name, I was like, I don't know anything about it. I'm doing it.
Immediately.
Yeah. Okay. So without further ado, I just want to at least say this is what we're talking about this week, and that is the Mongolian Death Worm.
Yes.
Now, if you're a D&D dork like we are, mm-hmm. or if you just like cryptids, I think this is going to be extremely interesting for you guys. Now, last week, like I said, we were sort of in the Afghani desert with the Kandahar giant.
Mm-hmm.
This week in the Gobi Desert, it's a different landscape.
Yeah.
And we're talking about an area that is incredible. And this creature that is, I don't know, it's one of those things that just has stood the test of time.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, just the name alone sounds really rad.
It does. It's a great band name.
Yeah, true. So I didn't know much about the Gobi Desert, and that's kind of where I'm going to start, okay?
Yeah, I like it.
It stretches across the southern Mongolia and northern China area, and it's extremely vast. In fact, it is one of the largest deserts in the entire world, mm-hmm. covering an area of about 1.3 million square kilometers, or about 500,000 square miles.
Wow. 500,000
square miles, dude. Like, that's what I'm saying. That area, that land is so immense. And I don't want to bore people again with like how, you know, my book suggestions, but there's an incredible series of books about Genghis Khan, mm-hmm. who, technically speaking, I think you're supposed to pronounce it Chinggis Khan.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
That I read. And so, like, this entire area is, like, very fascinating. The desert itself is a very interesting place in terms of biology and geography because it is real extreme. Well, it has very extreme temperatures on both ends of the spectrum. So during the daytime, it can get really hot, but at night, it can get very, very cold. And in certain areas of the Gobi Desert, it gets cold enough to where it's been known that, like, icicles and stuff can actually be, like, on the sand.
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly barren dunes and rocky outcrops, which, of course, not only create a sort of eerie, certainly desolate atmosphere, but immediately it brings to mind one of my favorite books and now movies, which is Dune.
Oh, yeah.
And the irony is...
Yeah, trailer.
Oh, I know, dude.
God, yeah, it looks awesome.
Amazing. The irony here is, too, in a way, the Mongolian death worm actually reminds me a lot of Dune as well.
Yeah, me too.
So, you've got this...
Actually...
What is it?
I wonder if that's
where you got it.
Yeah. Well, and Star Wars, the... I always want to say Rancor, but that's not it.
No, I know.
The sandworm thing.
Sarlacc.
Sarlacc pit. That's right. Yeah.
So this environment, it's kind of the opposite end of the spectrum from what we talked about a few weeks ago, which was, you know, the wet and thick rainforests of Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're talking about like a very arid, dry, barren sort of environment. Yet, even though it's so different, it's also perfectly suited for all these legends that emerge from here. So, to understand a little bit more about the habitat, you have to really kind of understand sort of the unique geography of it and the fact that with these extreme temperatures, despite all that and the harsh conditions and stuff, it actually does support a surprising variety of plant and animal life. Vegetation, including drought-tolerant plants, such as, you know, various trees and desert shrubs and grasses and stuff. But also, like, some pretty neat animal species are found there as well, and including the, I think I'm saying this correctly, but it's Bactrian camel. It's a different-looking camel that looks really cool, actually, and they're wild. They just, you know, roam. There's a Gobi bear, which is kind of like a... he's not looking after your picnic basket. It's a Gobi bear, right? Not Yogi Bear. And they're kind of like
a picnic?
Picnic, yeah. That's what Yogi Bear says, man. This guy never watched cartoons.
He says picnic?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Look at my picnic basket.
Now you see why I'm smarter than the average Fred Flintstone boo-boo. Yay! The fastest way I know to get a picnic basket.
I mean, you can look it up. That's what he's doing, folks.
I trust you.
Okay. Oh, man. There's snow leopards. There's these wild donkeys and, you know, a variety of reptiles and stuff. Deep within this area, for centuries, nomadic tribes that live there and the locals have spoken about this dreaded creature called the Ulgoy Korkoi, or the Mongolian death worm. The first documented mention of this creature here in the West was by the American paleontologist Roy Chapman Andrews in his book called On the Trail of Ancient Man, which came out in 1926. Described by locals as a creature resembling a large, thick-bodied worm, it has a crimson hue and measures between 2 and 5 feet in length. Legends attribute the worm with having venomous saliva, an electrical discharge capable of killing at a distance, and the ability to spit this corrosive yellow saliva that's capable of disintegrating flesh and bone. So basically what I'm telling you is it can kill you up close or from a distance.
See, that's interesting because I only knew about the like the electrical discharge stuff.
Yeah. Just cool. Dude, just wait until I found this stuff about how, just wait. So also like the sandworms in Dune, it said that it travels underground and can be spotted by the waves of sand that appear on the surface of the desert when it passes. This thing is so, again, entrenched in this culture that back in the 20s, when Roy Chapman Andrews was over there researching, the Mongolian prime minister at the time even stated that these things were real and that to be touched by this worm means instant death. Literally, nothing can be done to save you. Here's some other attributes that have been kind of described by, I guess, the legend and the nomadic tribes and stuff. The Mongolian death worm hibernates for 10 months of the year. It only emerges during June and July, which is perfect for camp, rad strangeness. Yeah. And even then, it prefers to come out of the ground when the ground is wet after, you know, a nice rain. You know, when the ground's softer and providing easier passage for its burrowing and stuff.
I mean, kind of like regular worms, you know, like earthworms.
Aside from the stray nomadic human it may run into and eat, its primary prey, apparently, are camels. The stories that I found, man, that describe the details are pretty grotesque in terms of its eating habits. Something straight out of like a, I don't know, like an 80s horror movie or, you know, another movie that came to mind when I started researching this topic was Tremors.
Oh, yeah.
But classic. Some of the eating habits are this. For one, it apparently will deposit its eggs inside the intestines of the camel. The camel then eventually, as the eggs grow and stuff, the camel's body is said to turn the same shade of red as the worm.
Mm.
Some believe that if the worm attacks, what it does is it raises half of its body out from the sand and inflates in a way until it just kind of sprays its venom on you.
Boy, that sounds familiar.
This is really intense too, man. Local sheep herders and stuff like that speak about their livestock being completely devoured and the bodies reduced to nothing but shriveled husks, bearing a striking resemblance to kind of like cattle mutilations and stuff like that we see reports of here over in the States.
You mean like exsanguination, like it sucks all the blood out?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Here's something that's interesting too. So during this time period, right, it's the mid 1920s, the Gobi Desert was still a very fascinating and relatively unexplored and unknown region of the world. That, plus the fact that there might be such a dangerous and mysterious creature that lived there, really kind of piqued the interests of adventurers, scientists, and cryptozoologists all at once, basically. And so, basically, at that time, there wasn't really that much written about this place in European language. The only people besides the nomadic peoples that lived there were a handful of just random travelers people that they talked about their journeys, but it was nothing like a large-scale mapping expedition or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But tales of these encounters, plus the fact that this author sort of wrote about it in that book and mentioned that he had heard about it, kind of started bringing a lot of people out there. Now, something that they found was tracking this Mongolian death worm had proved to be a daunting task. Many expeditions tried, all of which reportedly failed. They credit the worm's remarkable ability to sense vibrations and evade detection.
Hmm.
Its cryptic nature and exceptional burrowing skills allow it to vanish into the desert sands with astonishing speed, leaving behind a perplexed trail of those who dared to follow. Now, I will say, there was potentially an expedition that may have found something. So in 1972...
After these messages, we'll be right back.
It's It's a pretty cool place. If you're a Martian.
Or a vampire. Or a vampire.
You think you really know what's happening around here, don't you?
Is anyone out there wrong?
We're fighters for truth, justice, and the American way.
Hey, this is Woody.
And this is Tyler. And you're listening to That Would Be Rad.
And now, back to our show. So in 1972, some Russian scientists allegedly uncovered a dead specimen of one of these Mongolian death worms. Wow. But this specimen has since disappeared and is rumored to be hidden inside of the basement.
The Smithsonian.
Well, I knew you were going to think I was going to say that, but no, it says inside of the basement of a Russian museum. So basically the Russian branch of the Smithsonian.
Yeah, right. There it is.
Now, there have been more modern day expeditions, including in 1990 and in 1992, a guy named Ivan Mackerel led small groups of companions into the Gobi Desert to search for the worm. He said that he was inspired by Frank Herbert's novel Dune, which these giant fictional sandworms could be brought to the surface by rhythmic thumping. In fact, he even constructed a motor-driven thumper.
No way.
I swear. And even used small explosions to try to find it.
Wait, now was that in the old Dune?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's in the book, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In 2005...
That's awesome.
This zoological journalist, Richard Freeman, which is also a funny name, speaking of Dune, mm-hmm. of course they would have pronounced it Fremen, yeah. of the Center of Fortean Zoology, mounted an expedition, again, this is 2005, to hunt for the death worm, but again, came up empty-handed. Freeman's conclusion was that the tales of the worm's powers had to be apocryphal, and that the reported sightings likely involved an unknown species of worm or lizard. Now, let's take a quick second here and let's kind of not a skeptical look, but more of like a zoological perspective here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because for so long, scientists and researchers have attempted to kind of unravel these secrets and discover and find things like the Mongolian death worm. But for whatever reason, in this area, it's still been elusive. Some speculate that it may be a yet undiscovered species, which I like.
Yep.
While others propose that it could be an evolutionary adaptation of an existing animal, possibly a type of venomous snake or lizard, which I also like. But, you know, I think what people try to do is use zoology as a way to kind of help us sort fact from fiction. And I think that can be useful, but I think it is important to kind of know a couple things. First, it's important to note that many have said that we should not be misled by the word worm in its name, that that's specifically an English translation.
Hmm.
The creature, if it exists in the Gobi Desert, really more than likely could not be a soft sort of fleshy worm like people describe it as. Instead, it would be more like a snake or a legless lizard, you know,
so like
for that
sort
type of
like
environment.
Scaly.
Yeah. Yeah. If it was just like what we would consider like an earthworm or something like that, you know, it's just too dry there. There's not enough moisture and that thing would just shrivel up and be
just
done for.
Too inhospitable.
Mm-hmm,
to even,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There are some like explanations that people have offered like as a potential sort of misidentification. There's several species of snake that live out there. There's actually a species of lizard that is called, it's like a limbless reptile known as the worm lizard, which actually resembles a large worm. It burrows underground and can reach several feet in length. There's also, you know, a sand boa snake and that kind of thing. Now, here's the thing. Both the worm lizard and the sand boa, and by the way, if you look up worm lizard, I think you'll agree, if I saw that, I would just be like, oh, it's a snake. You can't tell that it's a legless lizard. And, you know, it's kind of like, I didn't dive too far into why it's not categorized as a snake and all that.
Yeah.
I'm just leaving it to the wonderful zoologists that went before us that made that distinction. And I just believe that that is there. Okay. That distinction exists. I'm not sure why. Mm-hmm. Listener, if you want to, you know, comment on the page and let us know, I applaud you. Essentially.
Well, you know, I guess, and I haven't seen pictures or anything, but I guess maybe is it talking more about how, like, there's some, like, lizards that are, like, very sort of scaly, as opposed to, like, snakes that are all fairly, like, not super, like, you know, sharp, angular scales. Or it's always sort of, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So basically, like, I wonder if that's the differentiation.
I don't know. It's funny, though. If you look it up, man, I'm telling you, dude, it looks... They're characterized by their long bodies, the reduction or loss of limbs, and rudimentary eyes, as many species have a pink body and scales arranged in rings. They do have a superficial resemblance to earthworms. So, I mean, out of a lot of these things, I can see how this could have been maybe a confusion for the Mongolian death worm, except for it's not venomous, and wait for it. It doesn't shoot electricity.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a pretty big delineation.
Yeah. There are several, as we know, several venomous snakes that can spit poison. Cobras, vipers. And they're not acidic, of course, but they certainly can cause harm and blindness. And there are some of the death worm sort of folklore. There's also this characteristic that its venom can, like, melt through metal instantly. Mm.
Wow.
So I was thinking as I was kind of reading this stuff, because it's a thing, it's even more like, remember when we talked about the Kandahar giant, we talked about a legend last week that there's no photographic evidence. There's no real physical evidence outside of potentially skeletons and stuff that were unearthed elsewhere around the world, like in the Americas and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
With this one, it's even more sparse, I guess. There's never been any sort of... I mean, I think this guy beats Bigfoot in terms of, you know, any sort of evidence, because at least with Bigfoot, there are reported footprints and that kind of stuff. This one, there's no pictures, there's no bodies, only story. And so when I was thinking about this, I'm like, okay, well... Let's say, if this was just like folklore, right? What would they, in this region of the world, what would they be attributing sort of like this red worm-like creature, right? In the Mongolian area. And I'm like, okay, China, Mongol, red. And I'm like, what about the Chinese dragon?
Dragons, baby.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Are these bearded, like, dragons. Little bearded, or like, what are the, what are the small, like, little mini dragons in D&D called?
You mean like Lockheed?
What was the one what's the one that, like, Rollins had that he always used?
Oh, yeah, it's just like Lockheed in the Excalibur comics.
Yeah, it's just like a little bitty,
I want to say wyvern, but that, I know that's not right.
Yeah. Pseudo-dragon.
Pseudo-dragon, mm-hmm. That's right.
A little bitty shelf-sized pseudo-dragon. Maybe these things that people were seeing in this side of the world were dragon hatchlings or pseudo-dragons.
Or, right here, red dragon wormling. That sounds exactly like it, yeah.
Now, any pictures that you see online, any illustrations, man... They really, really look like either a smaller version of the worm from Dune, or in D&D there is a famous worm. It's like this giant purple worm that kind of has the same characteristics in terms of, like, you know, moving underground and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's all you kind of see with this. Most of the stories, the accounts, anything that you find is all sort of passed down orally through these nomadic tribes. There's nothing really concrete or definitive, right? I mean, there's been countless. I mean, what's the TV show, man? There's a TV show that went out there, Expedition something something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've seen that one. Expedition Truth?
Something, one of them, right? And so all these folks have gone out there
with Josh Gates.
Yeah, and tried to find it. More and more, the kind of deeper I sort of dug into this, it seems that, you know, it is something that could be either a mythical creature that has sort of been deeply enriched in this folklore, mm-hmm. or it really is some sort of strange, unidentified species that lives out in this desert.
Yeah, one of the things that it's sometimes a little like bothersome to me is when, like, you have these people that live in the Gobi Desert, and it's, you know, really inhospitable. You know, they're clearly really tough people. And, you know, it's kind of like your Inuit tribes in Alaska and your, you know, people that live in these areas that are just like not made for human existence. You know what I mean? And this idea that, like, especially as like us Westerners, we look at this and they're like, oh, it's just this like folklore that they have. They have these made up things about these like death worms, and it's all just like fake. And it's like, to me, that's so sort of like insulting,
yeah,
to those kind of people. It's like, how do we know? We're not living out there in the, you know.
Yeah, not to mention the fact that like maybe it did exist and it's extinct. You know, like, you.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, take a trip to the library and look up any book on Australian animals from way back in the day, mm-hmm. or look at them now. There's animals that exist out there that are just crazy as hell looking, man.
Yeah. Or like the thylacine, like that's like a Tasmanian tiger.
Yeah, all that stuff, man.
You know, yeah.
We talked about cryptids ages and ages ago in one of our episodes, you know, and we mm-hmm. talked about the fact that when the platypus was first discovered, right, this guy sends a description along with, I think, a dead platypus that he had, what's it called, man, when you stuff
them? Oh, like taxidermied?
Yeah, that he kind of stuffed or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He sent it to England, or that he taxidermied. Is that is that what you're trying to tell me to say?
There it is.
That's not, taxidermied is not a...
No, that's the official term.
Okay. Well, I'm not saying it.
Taxidermidist.
Stuffed it. Anyways, he sends this specimen, we'll say, mm-hmm. to England, and like, guys, get a load of this. This is nuts. This is crazy. And they're all just like, this guy just threw a bunch of body parts on this, and this is a hoax.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't even allowed, I think, to come and speak. I think he went to like, maybe it was like Oxford or something like that.
Like, get him out of here.
Get him out. And come to find out, hey, look, the platypus is a real creature. Now, I'm about to send you something, pal. Because although this worm is certainly fascinating, there's something else that's happened really recently in the Gobi Desert. And I can't help but like maybe think that this is just a satellite photo of a giant worm sign. Hold on a second. So what it is, listener, is on Google Earth, there mm-hmm. was some satellite imagery that people found within the Gobi Desert that looks, they say, like a strange circular formation. Some people have said it could be like a Stonehenge. Some people say it's a secret military base. I say it's a giant worm. It's like a spot where a giant worm was and left, pal.
I mean, it does look like 2 seconds after the picture was taken, it looks like it's just going to like cave in and like the mouth
exactly,
is going to come out.
Amazing,
yeah, that's
right?
Amazing, dude.
Because I just was like, okay, well, you know, the Gobi Desert sounds like one of these places where I guarantee you weird stuff happens.
Oh, yeah.
You're talking about and if nothing else, like, you go there, you look up in the sky, you're going to see some, like, UFOs or something. You know, you're going to see, mm-hmm. It's apparently, like, one of the best places to look at the night sky. It's just completely clear of any sort of light pollution and that kind of thing. So I feel like this is an area that is kind of in a way somewhat untapped, because I tried to like look up like other strange stuff that happens in the, and all I found was like this, you know, these people saying that there's military bases, which they very well could be.
Yeah, I mean, it could be something, but boy, that is either the military base is really leaning in and just yeah, using right. that myth, you know, or I mean, it is weird. It's real weird.
There's some other crazy things that happen in the desert there. I don't know if you've ever heard of the phenomenon about the singing sands.
Oh, yeah.
So the Gobi Desert is home to this famous thing called the singing sands. And in certain areas, the shifting sand dunes emit this unique humming or booming sound when the winds pass over them.
Oh, I thought it was like a high-pitched frequency.
Well, I think maybe the humming or booming, I'm not sure. It just says the phenomenon occurs due to the size, shape, and moisture content of the sand particles.
You know, I wonder if it's kind of like, I mean, and the only reason I think of this is because you said it's like a deeper, like booming sound is like, you know, when you like sort of kick your foot into the sand and it does that like little like lower, like scuff kind of sound. You know what I'm talking about?
I think what I found more confusing is like, have you been to the beach before?
Right by the water. No, okay. It's like a little like scuffing. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't, you know,
there's no way I'm going to be able to replicate this sound.
Yeah, well, and also I typically don't just go to the beach and start kicking the ground. Do you know what I mean? Like, I apologize.
So stupid.
It's a like a, thing to do. You're like, hey guys, check this out. Good God, who brought
this
guy?
I'm going to find it and you're going to post it.
Instantly sunburned. And everybody's like, who brought this guy, man? Anyway, so I really like Red Bulls.
I do like
Red guy.
Bulls. We got
need
another one right now.
Hey, guy, we got it. Oh, man. It's very difficult for me to get past the fact that, like, well, it's just hard for me not to imagine that Frank Herbert didn't somehow pull from this. Because, like, there's so much of this story and legend that's almost exact, right? I mean, even like the environment, the desert planet, Arrakis, the worms, of course, like in Dune, they're like these huge giant things. In this, they're, you know, I think at the longest, maybe 5 feet long.
I mean, even the Sarlacc though, like, I wonder if, I mean, that just sounds like Lucas was grabbing from Herbert.
Although, well, maybe, but also, you know, like, I mean, he didn't have to look very far where they were filming. I mean, they filmed in like, where did they film that sequence? I want to say it's, my grandparents were living there. It wasn't Ghana. It might've been Ghana. I don't know, but they were in Africa basically. And so he could have just kind of borrowed from local mythology, which I always think is pretty cool. I think all in all, this is one of those creatures that, again, I had never really heard of. It's kind of off the radar. It's not super famous. I think I can kind of see why. I mean, it's not as exciting probably to a lot of people as something like Bigfoot or something like that. But the idea of these little, extremely deadly worms that can evade capture so easily but can also be extremely deadly existing is terrifying. And let me just one other reminder about the truth of terrifying biology. There's like, I mean, there are ants that are in Australia. They bite you and then you die.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of deadly stuff out there, man.
Now, did you see in your research another cryptid called the Gobi Gecko?
No.
This is pretty interesting. And I wonder if there is any sort of correlation. I've never heard of this until now, I'm going to be honest. But it says,
we'll return after these messages.
Something out there waiting for us.
Yeah. Hey, this is Bryce Johnson from the Bigfoot Collectors Club, and you're listening to Tyler and Woody on That Would Be Rad, because that is rad.
But it says, it was a cryptid reptile reported from the Gobi Desert in what is now China's, oh boy, Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region, once between 1773 and 1777. It was reportedly seen by Yu Jinao, who encountered it in the Gobi in the Shanshan region whilst taking a desert walk in the night. The animal approached him, prompting him to shoot it in the chest with two arrows, killing it. Yu described it as 9 feet, 8 inches long, bipedal, and resembling an enormous lizard or gecko.
Man.
Yeah, David C. Hsu suggests it may have been an unknown species of lizard adapted for bipedal locomotion. A more dramatic alternate explanation put forward by Hsu is that it could be a living dinosaur, such as the Oviraptorid Cetipodi or However, as Hsu notes, these dinosaurs are believed to have been feathered and may not have resembled geckos at all. That's pretty weird, huh?
Yeah, man.
That it's like a type of sort of lizard gecko, you know?
Yeah. Well, and just as another example of, well, why haven't we ever seen one? You might not even remember this. You sent me a picture of a worm that you found in your yard, and you're like, dude, I don't know what's going on here. And it looks like an earthworm, but it's got like a really weird head. Do you remember that?
It sounds familiar. It
looks like a hammerhead worm.
Do you remember? Oh, yeah, I kind of do. Yeah.
Well, you sent me that, and, you know, just as synchronicity would have it, I actually, for the first time, had seen one just a few weeks earlier. No, not minutes, but it is actually pretty, it can be super harmful to you, but also pets and stuff too.
Wait, what does it do?
So basically, these are actually, and here's another thing, we keep on coming back to them. They're native to Southeast Asia, but they have been known to thrive in the U.S. in like the hotter southern states like Alabama and, you know, southern parts of California and Florida and Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi.
What? And that thing that I found was rare like that?
I mean, not super rare, but I'd never seen one until, like I said, man, just not too long ago. And the funny thing was not to get off of...
You fought, you know, one.
The Mongolian death worm, but this kind of, to me, supports the argument that things exist like this that we might not be familiar with living in our own yard, right?
Yeah.
So when I looked it up, you know, I like to feed my chickens like a random earthworm every now and then. They'll love it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was doing some yard work and I saw this worm and I was like, what is this? That's weird. It doesn't look like a... And I, of course, you know, anytime there is a creature in my yard that I'm not familiar with, I'm not touching it with my bare hands, man. You know, like, I don't know if it's poisonous. I don't know what this thing is because it looks kind of crazy. And listener, I encourage you to look up what a hammerhead worm looks like.
Mm-hmm.
First off, the hammerhead worms actually eat earthworms. Wow. They produce this neurotoxin.
So they're like cannibals.
Well, no, they're, I mean.
Sort of.
I mean, just because they're, I guess, they're worms, sure.
That would be like two different kind of dogs and one dog eating the other one. He would be a cannibal.
Yeah, it'd be kind of like a wolf eating a dog. It's not really a cannibal, but they are kind of, they share a common ancestor.
Okay.
Anyway, we're not going to get too far into
it. I'll let it pass.
History award. All right, so they produce a nasty neurotoxin that paralyzes the earthworm. And apparently if you touch it, if you get enough of that you can get enough of that neurotoxin on you. So if you handle a hammerhead flatworm, you should wash your hands with hot soapy water, rinse it with alcohol and use disinfectant and all that, because it can hurt you. Now, here's another thing. So it's actually not a round worm. Okay. It's what's considered a flatworm. We're not going to get into the details about that. But here's something.
Well, now.
Smokes a pack a day. Hold on
real quick. Is it anything remotely related to like aquatic flatworms?
No, other than maybe the fact that these things reproduce primarily, apparently, through fragmentation.
That's how the ones that I'm thinking of.
So yeah. Like a flatworm in general, you, let's say, chop it in half because you think, oh, man, I'm going to kill this thing. Chop it.
It's like a hydra.
It gets pinched off or whatever, and you've now created more than one worm.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the reason I say that, like I've said a million times on the show, is I used to be really into like having a fish tank and growing coral and, you know, breeding clownfish there for a while. And so, like, we would get these flatworms that were just like impossible to get rid of, and they would do the same thing. They would, you know, you go to like smash them up, and all of a sudden now you have like three more,
mm-hmm.
which is awesome.
It's pretty awesome. It's also gross and kind of scary.
Yeah.
So anyway, these are worms that have been in my yard for a while, didn't know anything about them, and, you know, I just so happened to see one before you did. This is just an example of the fact that just because what was that funny?
It was almost like you were bragging for something before me.
Oh, man. Everybody's got that friend that's like, we used to call him like the one-upper.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you're like, yeah, man. Oh, dude, I just got a.
You are
got
that super. Friend,
I am not that friend.
Yes,
you are, man.
I did it.
No, I didn't just do it. I just so happened to see it before you. I'm saying the coincidence or synchronicity was such that you sent me that photo, and I was like, oh, yeah, man, it's this. You idiot. What are you from, Cleveland or something? Georgia?
Yes, yes.
What, did you get the history award? They even have a science class there?
Yes.
Anyway, what I'm saying is, dude, this is a perfect example. The Mongolian death worm is a perfect example of the fact that here at our show, what I'm saying is Tyler's that friend who likes to one-up somebody. Hey, man, I just got Super Mario Brothers 3. He's like, congratulations, it's 2023. I have a, you know, Xbox One 1000 or whatever it is. Cool, man.
I've got a PS3. That's not too much to brag about.
Whatever, man. Okay,
By the way, I don't even know if this was this episode or the last one. When I went to Video Game Trader, the store, the game that I ended up walking away with for $2 was Tiger Woods PGA 2008.
God.
Which I hate golf so much, but those games are actually kind
of fun. What's funny, dude?
Oh, boy.
Now, let me preface this with, we probably should have finished the episode first before we started talking about random stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's our show, and you're here for it. And we salute you.
Mm-hmm.
I have never played a round of golf in my own entire life to this day, to date. But I will say that I wish so bad that I would have, like, at least given it a go at some point, because I think, you know, some of the places that I've been in the world where they have a golf course. Recently, when I was in Virginia, it's the oldest golf course in America. And I was at one in Ireland a couple of years ago. Just absolute gorgeous landscape.
Right by the water.
Just beautiful, man. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I think it would be like a good old man sport to kind of have in my back pocket. So I'm not saying that I might never, you know, I might play someday. At least I play Tiger Woods on the PS3.
There you go. Well, so this actually is par for the course. But I am going to one-up you here because my stepdad, Rick, whom at the time I did not like as a...
He won the Masters.
He helped me win the Masters. No, he loved golf so much. And he made me take golf lessons.
No way.
Yeah.
Hated it. You hated
every second of it. It was actually down at Skits Mountain, which was right beside...
My wife's grandfather built that course and owned it.
Oh, did he?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
No, but he made me take golf lessons. And I made the conscious... Well, here was the thing. So the only sort of...
This is the part of the story where Tyler says that he was like Olympic level great, but he just wanted to just turn it all away.
No. This is the opposite. I can't remember who it was. It was somebody in the class. That was the only like redeeming quality of it that I was like, well, there's this kid's going to be in the golf lesson. And, you know, he's like a friend at school or whatever. And he ended up like backing out and yes. not doing it. Mm-hmm. So I get there first day. I just hate it. I don't know anything. I'm surrounded by assholes who like, they're just like bragging and talking to each other about like the best, like new cleats or whatever the, you know, whatever. I know nothing. I'm renting clubs. It's just miserable. I made the conscious decision that day to fake passing out.
Oh my
God. So I would go home and I would say, I mean, it had to be pretty convincing because...
Dude, first off, no, this is what happened. It wasn't convincing because nobody can... No one's... Like, you're not faking passing out.
I'm pretty sure
you,
I did.
No, dude, these folks, like, came in there, you're just like, you had your JNCOs on.
No.
You had your big, like, metal necklace with, like, some hemp on there. And you came
wallet
in...
Wallet chain.
Like, you had your fingernails painted black. And they're like, good God almighty. And they're like... If we could just get, oh, he pretended like he fainted. He did it for us. All right, bud. Well, we're sorry it's hot out here. And then they just got the heck out of Dodge.
I mean, the funny thing is
he drove away in that little Honda.
No, I wasn't even driving. I was like 14.
Oh, my gosh. That's 13, amazing. 14. Faked yeah. fainting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the funny thing is
that's a commitment.
And the only thing I remember is, when I fell, you know, it was like early in the morning. That was another thing. That
oh,
was
boy.
Like,
nice and cool. Couldn't look more pansy.
No, I mean, it was pretty hot. I mean, it was, I don't know.
God.
The only reason I say that is because
there
was
I've ever heard.
There was like dew on the ground. Mm-hmm. I remember oh, when I
did
when
you make
I
a sound?
Fainted.
Did you make a sound when you
no,
fell over?
But oh. I may have given it away a little because I'm, I think I said several times before I did it, like, man, are you guys hot out here?
I'm feeling so good.
I think I even said something probably along the lines of like, man, I probably should have drank some more water before leaving.
You might have gotten an extra Gatorade.
No, but when I fell, my face landed in like the wet dew, like grass. And like...
Yeah, but how do you commit to just like, did you stop yourself with your hands or arms or anything? You just
No. That was
how
the one.
How in the heck did you do that?
I mean, I just let it go. I just was like, okay, this is it.
Don't want to, got to.
Yeah. But I mean, I will say it was like pretty soft, you know.
Oh, I'm sure you chose like the soft. Anybody that fakes fainting so they don't have to take a golf lesson,
yeah,
chose the soft ground to do it in.
Yeah. No, but listen, so the grass, grass is like really itchy to me. Like if I roll around on the grass,
good
like,
God, man, you just gotta stop. I'm gonna,
and my
like,
face
as
was
your best
so...
friend, I'm gonna make you stop telling the story because it's making you sound awful.
You know, grass is real scratchy to me.
No, I mean like,
oh, God,
like really like itchy. Like I remember as a kid, like just rolling around in grass and it was, you know, anyway, I say that because like, I was just fighting, keeping my eyes closed and a straight face, and I just wanted to scratch my face so bad.
Well, what they did, I feel so, now I feel bad for like the poor soul that was like teaching the lesson. This guy thinks you're dying on him.
Well, he continued and he had like.
Was he just like, get on up?
Some other kid in the class. And then, no. I just went totally limp. Like they had to like. Grab each one of my arms and like lift me up, and then it was sort of like a oh what happened kind of thing.
Oh my God, dude, that's
yeah,
that's amazing.
So, needless to say, I still don't like golf.
Yeah,
not for me.
Well, and first, I just want to say thank you guys for listening to all of that. And yeah, I know you came for the Mongolian death worm,
mm-hmm.
but you got. So much more.
Yeah. And the Academy Award goes to.
I will say this, though. It's interesting, man. Thus far into this sort of summer event, our Camp Red Strangeness, International, like what's cool about it is we're kind of seeing that no matter the geographical location, no matter the environment or whatever,
mm-hmm.
there are these, just like we always do, man. There are these tales and stories of deadly creatures, scary creatures, helpful creatures, mm-hmm. You know, like when we talked about the orang bunyan?
Like the death worm.
But no, I mean, I'm just saying, like, again, it always takes me back to, I just want to learn so much about all these global cultures and all these stories that exist of mm-hmm. creatures or things that we don't know about here or aren't as familiar with here in the States, man. And so I think the Mongolian death worm is a perfect example of that. And we can even see in pop culture that those tropes and stuff are so good that they're borrowed from.
Yeah, I mean, I knew about it, but, well, I mean, I will, you know, the whole, my big Dune phase, I guess, was it this year or last? No, last year.
Yeah, whenever it came out.
I mean, I'm, like, obsessed. So I clearly wouldn't have known up until then, but, like, man, I've never thought about the, I mean, he would have, like, Herbert would have had to like, heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so similar, like the head and, like, the mm-hmm. teeth or whatever, you know?
And, like, this also is one of those situations that we love so much when we can imagine the artist, mm-hmm. whether it's a filmmaker, an author, whatever, even not artist, just any kind of author, even just like Jacques Vallée or whatever. When we can imagine these greats, people mm-hmm. that we like hold in a little bit of a higher esteem for what they've created, when we imagine them sort of turning the pages of, you know, stories like this and reading about them, it's kind of like, in a way, and I hate to do it like I always do, but it kind of feels like time traveling in a sense. Like mm-hmm. we're able to kind of feel the same sort of joy and wonder that they did when they were potentially looking at this. And it's just like you said, it's hard for me to imagine that he didn't take some sort of inspiration from this creature.
Yeah, and I also love like the sort of self-fulfilling prophecy of it all where, you know, he was, we're guessing, but he was more than likely inspired by this, mm-hmm. Frank Herbert. And then years later, you know, the expeditionist guy would come out and use something that was written in the book, like the thumper thing, you know. So it's like that sort
it's
of like
a full circle.
Circle.
Now,
that's really cool.
To kind of button it all up, I will say this. While it's easy to be skeptical about this, and while it's skeptics in general just will dismiss this creature as just pure folklore, mm-hmm. you got to keep something in mind, man. This is true. There are a lot of people in Mongolia to this day that do not consider it a mythical creature. They believe it is a real animal that has not been identified yet. Because there are so many different stories through all these families, witnesses who swear that they've seen this creature in person.
Yeah.
Everything from park rangers to police officers and even, again, like I said, the Mongolian prime minister.
Yeah, it reminds me, too. I mean, I think we even mentioned this a few episodes back, maybe. But the, you know, how Iceland, like 80% of the population believe wholeheartedly in elves or, you know, the like hinterfolk or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just, again, like, I know I said it earlier on the show, but it's just so, like, frustrating and insulting to me, like, when, you know, we show up as a tourist and we're like, this is just silly. Like, why would they believe this? Because, you know, we're coming with a Disney worldview and we're mm-hmm. like, that's not real. That's fake. And it's kind of like that with this. It's like, mm-hmm. I could see people just blowing it off and like, oh, that's silly. But, like, you know, there are people in this world that, like, they live among these things that we may just think of as, like, you know, folk tales or tall tales. But, like, maybe they are real, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, their traditions and stuff and stories and things have been passed down mm-hmm. for so many more generations than ours, you know?
Right.
It's like a lot of us, especially in the U.S., who are, you know, European descent,
mm-hmm.
our cultures and stuff over time, depending on, you know, how intense your grandparents were and stuff, would kind of water down that old world culture to be more, quote, American.
Oh,
and so much of that was lost, and mm-hmm. not to mention the fact that we're just a much younger country. So you go and you think about somebody that's, let's just say, imagine a kid that's in like you know, that lives in the Gobi Desert.
Mm-hmm.
His family have been nomadic for thousands of years,
right?
And, you know, their belief system and stuff is going to be far different and far more like entrenched, really,
yeah,
than ours could ever be, I think. I mean, I just don't even know that it's possible, you know, like I can remember some stories and stuff that my grandparents and like my Italian lineage and stuff would talk about, and but not, you know, but not a ton. It's just mm-hmm. sort of like, yeah, you know, hey, we're American now, we speak English here, you know, that
yeah.
kind of mentality.
Yeah, for sure.
And so the unfortunate consequence of that is so many of those traditions, stories
lost.
Yeah, folklore, mythology, all that stuff is just lost. And so that sucks. And so that's part of the reason, again, why we get so immersed in this stuff and so excited about it, even if something is seemingly minor in terms of the amount of information or evidence that exists, like the Mongolian death worm, mm-hmm. still excites me like crazy because it's something that I'd never really heard of.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of Dune and things that I love. So it's amazing, I think, man.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, even like you were saying, I think the show's... No, I think you were thinking of Destination Truth. That was his first show, which is...
I'm not a big fan of any of them, so that's probably why I don't care.
No, that first show is like one of the best shows ever made. Like, it is... It's this show if we were, you know, bad, like, real explorers. Like, it's really funny. And
what's his name?
Josh Gates. But he's one of like the funniest dudes.
I could be thinking of the wrong.
No, that we sat in like a panel.
Okay. Yeah.
He's an awesome dude. Yeah. But he, you know, he's like a world traveler. But I mean, even for him, it's like, you know, they go on this expedition to try to sort of find proof. And actually, in that show, they actually did find the best possible proof for the Yeti. Like, really? They ended up finding, like, plaster casts, like, way out in the middle of nowhere. But even someone like him, like, you know, you show up and you do an expedition for, like, a week, maybe 2 weeks. And, you know, I just think, and I'm not saying, like, they did this on the show, but it's, like, just the idea of, like, well, we didn't find anything. It must be fake. Let's just wrap it up.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's, like, I think a lot of these things these people are seeing and they are witnessing because they are living in it. And so
always. Yeah. That's a great point. Yeah.
And so, like, you know, for them, it's like, they're not there for just 2 weeks. It's taken them 20 years to get a, you know, 2 second glimpse of this thing on the horizon. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, stuff like that. I think our world is a lot more, fascinating and just special and weird and, you know, unusual. And, you know, I think the one thing that we do on the show, whether we are more skeptical on some things over others, I think it's just allowing ourselves to still sort of bask in that wonder and be impressed by the weirdness of the world, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. It's, well, it's super rad.
Yeah, dude. So if you'd like to find us or communicate with us or ask us to be your friend, which we will definitely say yes to, you can hit us up on Instagram, jump in the comments, shoot us a DM. If you'd like to tell us about maybe your own sort of localized like ghost story or urban legend or local cryptid or some weird paranormal thing that you experience, if you'd like to write it out more of a long form type thing, head on over to thatwouldberadpod@gmail.com. Shoot over to thatwouldberadpodcast.com, our website, where you can jump on a podcatcher to hear the show, leave us a 5-star review. Most importantly is you can directly leave a voice memo on the site to us telling this story in your own voice, which, you know, may end up in a future episode. We love that kind of stuff, and, you know, we accept all of it. If you're not getting enough of That Would Be Rad in the free feed, what you're listening to now, you can head on over to Patreon and hit up the Rabbit Trail, our Patreon, where it's just more of what you love, a little looser, a little later at night, and it's just us hanging out, pretty much doing what we're doing now, but, you know, with a little less structure, maybe? I don't know. Tell that one friend that you know that's a weirdo about the show. I'm sure they would love it. And we hope that you're having a great summer. Woody's been doing some traveling. I'm getting ready to head out to Montana. So I'm sure I'll have a whole lot of adventure stories when I get back. But you got anything else, Woody?
I think that's it, man.
Right on, man. Well, we love you. We appreciate you. And as always,
be rad.
That's the way it goes.
Also, what if Paul Bunyan was a descendant of the Nephilim?
Well, maybe. But he was a straight fictional character, right? Straight up fictional character, right?
I mean, that's what we were told by the Rockefeller.
Okay, I'm going to give you the first. I'm sending the first present to you, or I'm showing you the first present now.
I knew it was One Piece.
Yeah, but it's a 3-in-1. So it's first volume, second volume, third volume. It's like, I don't know, several hundred, maybe, let's see, almost 600 pages.
I mean, I know I give you a lot of shit about it, but I will say
this will give you a good start.
Well, the other day I went to like a video game store, which you're going to really laugh when I tell you what I ended up walking out with. But it's like Video Game Trader, I think. It's in Buford. pretty cool store. They moved to like a new location, so they have like a ton of new stuff. I was actually looking to see if I could find like one of those like Retron things, but I can't seem to find.
Yeah, you can do that on Amazon, pal.
Yeah, but I don't know which one's actually like good. Or
all you gotta do is ask me.
There's like 100 of them.
No.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. Anyway, and I ended up, so I'm looking through like the PS3 games because that's how far back I am. Dude, there's like 5 One Piece games.
Oh, yeah.
I almost got one.
Witcher's got like, one for a Switch, dude.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Is it cool?
Yeah, it's really cool. Now, like hold on. Here's the Pokemon? Other. Let me give you this other one, okay? Now, this one, it's so funny because we kind of talked about it already. And this one, the story behind how I got this thing, I don't really want to put on the thing. Oh. See what you got there?
Whoa.
Dude, so it's a 1979 print of it. Hardback or whatever. I mean, we talked about verklempt. I'm like, we're